So that means the 15th we'll have the closed book exam. So for the oral presentation, can be finished by the 15th also? Like that? All the oral presentation? And the open book exams should also be, your essays should also be handling by the 15th at the latest. I won't accept them after the 15th. Like that, because I don't want to get into a whole thing of, you know, having to mark them over the next 6 weeks or something like that. So everything should be on time. Is that okay? Everyone's happy with that? I told you anyway. I told you many weeks ago that it was going to be like this. So this is the system. Okay, so we'll have it on the 15th. Okay, so what did we discuss last week? So what did we discuss last week? These days the system is, when your parents die, then they give you all the money. That's the system. At least in the West. You know, when they die, then they give you all the money. But in the Vedic system, when you got married, that's when they give you the main section. And then of course, when they pass away, then you would inherit whatever was there as well. But there was a large inheritance, and that's practical. That's far more practical. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, your father passes away when he's 80, and then you're 60, and then you get everything. Yeah, and you've had to work for 40 years to, you know, maintain yourself. It's like practical. The Vedic system's much bigger. When you're 20, then you get some dowry, and it makes it much more practical. It makes life far easier. And then if material life is easy, or if it is, how do you say it, like, if it is like made to be the less difficult material life is, then yeah, it makes it easier for one to practice Krishna consciousness. Like that, if one doesn't have to worry all the time, you know, how will I support myself? How will I support the family? Where will the money come from next week? You know, those things are already taken care of. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you do not finish in this lifetime, next lifetime you'll take birth in wealthy mercantile family of Kshatriyas or Brahmanas, like that. People who already have their material situation worked out, so then you can practice Krishna consciousness much easier. Any other points?
So, well, I was thinking about, you know, especially Kshatriyas when they get married, and this dowry is supposed to be a security for the lady if the husband dies. So that actually, I was thinking it's quite a big load. You know, how she's going to maintain all these maidservants and horses and elephants and everything. She has to think about maintaining all these things. It's just a burden.
No, it's not, because in the Kshatriya families, there's more than one Kshatriya. There's brothers. Yeah, it's say in the Kuru dynasty. Yeah, if you look at the five Pandavas, one of the five Pandavas dies. Right, there's four other Pandavas.
Yeah.
So that's how it works in the Kshatriya families. There's always other Kshatriyas, not one Kshatriya.
So the other relatives of the husband will look after the wife of the deceased.
Yeah, of course.
Just like Kunti Devi.
Yeah, Kunti Devi. In all the Vedas, in human society, if someone passes away in the family, then the rest of the family looks after that person. That's the system in Vedic civilization. Any other points?
In Vedic culture, both material needs and spiritual needs were taken care of simultaneously.
Hmm.
those like three fun women who was enjoying fulfilling his material desires as well as
Yeah, that's an important thing. So one of the important things of this section of the Bhagavad Gita is that one Swayambhu Manu in chapter 22, he shows us how to live within this material world so that we can attain the ultimate goal of life, which is Krishna consciousness, which is liberation from material bondage. But simultaneously he teaches us that we can be materially satisfied. We have to satisfy our material desires. If the material desires are not satisfied, you'll want to take birth again in this material world to try to satisfy those desires. And that is not the point of life. We don't want to take birth again within this material world. That is also part of the reason why, in the relationship between husband and wife, it is very important that they play their respective roles properly. In other words, the wife must satisfy the husband's desires. Meaning, she must treat him, and this will be spoken of tonight. Actually, tonight speaks about the duties of...
ideal husband.
Actually, the duties of women are spoken about tonight. We'll see in the... But if the woman satisfies the desires of the husband, then those desires being satisfied, he will not desire to take birth in the material world again because his desires are unfulfilled. And similarly, if the husband does not satisfy the desires of the wife, then she may also leave her body still having material desires unfulfilled and then entering back into another body instead of transcending. So it is important that the husband and wife act properly with each other in order to satisfy each other's desires, which becomes more and more difficult as Kali Yuga progresses. Because as Kali Yuga progresses, the husband and wife are less qualified, and then they find it very difficult to live up to the Vedic standard. And we'll actually see tonight what the Vedic standard is. Devahuti will actually read tonight what the Vedic standard is of a wife, a Vedic wife. And it's very exalted, that point.
So, verse next to the last one, it says that the one will attain this, the one who is not trying to satisfy desires, not the one who is trying to satisfy desires. You know how it says, in the river center of the ocean, who is ever being filled up in the darkness itself. Similarly, the person who is not trying to satisfy his desires will attain peace. So how to reconcile
this? That's a very advanced level of consciousness. Very advanced level. But as we've seen in this section of the Bhagavad Gita, it's being taught that you have to satisfy your material desires but simultaneously cultivate Krishna consciousness. Like if someone tries to remain renounced, in other words, they try to stay brahmachari for their whole life, but that desire to be married is somewhere within the heart. Like that, they're trying to go for the highest thing, but still the desire is within the heart. They don't satisfy that. At the end of life, they may still be meditating on that. Yeah, well, this is what is being spoken of by Swayambhu Manu. That's what Prabhupada is explaining in this section of the Bhagavad Gita. It's important to understand this point. Don't try to renounce prematurely. You see Swayambhu Manu satisfying his desires, but in the proper way. And then you see Kardama and Devahuti in this chapter satisfying their desires but in the correct way. It's very important to understand this point, how to do it according to Vedic standards. That's what this section of the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. Like that. How to be materially satisfied and then transcend.
Well, my understanding is that the sage Kardama didn't have any desire to marry, he actually wants to marry to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. Because basically, you know, the progeny. Like his mind was always fixed on Krishna.
Yeah. Very, very close to that kind of consciousness. Yeah. It is said that Devahuti, she had some... See, these people are some of the original personalities in the universe. So they have a great responsibility. So even though they may be apparently asking for or desiring something material, in other words, to have a child, we'll see tonight Devahuti desires to have a child, and Kardama is desiring to also have a suitable wife so that he can populate the universe as a Prajapati. But they're doing these things on behalf of the Lord. That's the point. That's their motivation, like that.
Devotional
service. Yeah, it's bhakti. It's definitely devotional service. So it's very close. Although you would see someone like the four Kumaras who were previous even to Manu and so forth as sons of Brahma, they renounced everything. That is pure transcendental consciousness. Okay. But they're being very dutiful and they're teaching us that in the material world you have to do your duty. Do your duty but in such a way that you become liberated. That's the way they're teaching us. Unless you're so advanced that you just walk away and that's fine. As the Kumaras did, that's permissible. There's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. Yeah, but you have to be, the point is you have to have the adhika, you have to be qualified, otherwise you'll come back. Again, then, so what was the point? It's Falgu Vairagya. You want actual renunciation. Okay, so we'll start chapter 23, we'll go to verses 1 to 11. Chandra Balabhi, who rubs the board off every week?
What's the?
The board?
Huh?
Every week. Huh? I write Srimad Bhagavatam, class 166. Canto 3, chapter 23, verses 1 to 11,
yes.
And then I come the next week and it's all rubbed off.
I don't
do
that at all. Who does
I
don't know?
Well, I don't know who's doing it.
Definitely, I'm not doing it.
Shankar Prabhu was teaching the Bhagavad Gita and I told him, please don't do it, so he told me he wasn't doing it.
Okay.
You do the kid one, you use the board.
I do use, but I never wipe anything. We only move like, you know,
it's so it can only be under roof of roof. And I'll go to him and he'll say, I don't do it. So I don't know who does it. And every week I come, like this. I'm getting old, I can't handle this.
Actually,
I'm
not,
kind of
I didn't use
the... I'm sick today,
and
I can't handle this, too much
for me. 2 weeks I didn't use only, because you know that last weekend there was no class, and this week,
yeah.
Mataji gave. I didn't use
okay.
Do the class
only. If someone can do the service and sitting behind the curtains for the next couple of days to try to work out who's doing this, because I want to get to the bottom of this situation. It's not a big thing, but it just makes my life easier. And then what they do, they pull out the cord every week and put the cord in the cupboard. So I've just driven from the farm.
Yeah.
Now I'm not feeling well, I haven't got a lot of time. When I come, all I have to do is like, you know, drop off one number and just put up one number. So I have to go and plug the whole thing in and rearrange the whole room. It's like this every week, you know.
I know about this though, so definitely I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I don't know who is doing that.
Okay, so if anyone has time to, if you want some service this week, please. Anyway, listen. Okay, so chapter 23, we'll do verses 1 to 11 tonight, and then I think in the next, either tomorrow night we'll finish chapter 23, but I don't think we will, but we'll probably finish chapter 23 tomorrow night, and then next Monday, and next Tuesday I'll do an overview of the whole chapters 18 to 23, and the following Tuesday, which will be the 15th of April, then we'll have the close book again. Okay. Devahuti's lamentation. Maitreya continued. After the departure of her parents, the chaste woman Devahuti, who could understand the desires of her husband, served him constantly with great love as Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, serves her husband. So as we spoke of in previous classes, what is the main thing that we look for when we are looking for a marriage partner?
Character.
The character, yeah. Prabhupada actually says three things in one of the purports from the previous chapters. Anyone remember what Prabhupada says?
Age.
Age.
Character.
Character.
And
like
visual. Yeah. Yeah. He says that, yeah. He says quality.
Qualities.
He says those three words, but he also says like-minded disposition. He says that as well.
The Sanskrit for use is vai shil guna adi viya. So vai means age, shil means the character.
Guna means quality. So one must look for someone who has proper character. That is the main reason why we choose the marriage partner. Actually, the most important factor when we're trying to choose the person who will marry. And the person who that'll be the second biggest thing that you do in your life. Now, the first biggest commitment you make in your life is to take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. That is the most important thing that you'll do in this lifetime. The second most important thing will be your marriage and having your children like that. But having the marriage, it is such an important thing, and the most important consideration, there must be a person of character, and especially there must be a person who is a devotee. That is the main qualification. And we see that Lord Shiva's Devahuti is being compared to Bhavani, or Parvati. Such a great personality. Such a highly qualified personality. Now in the next few verses we'll see what is the ideal Vedic wife. What is the ideal in Vedic womanhood. Which will be displayed by Devahuti, who is the most qualified woman in the universe. So this will be described in the next few verses. So Prabhupada mentions within the purport. So this is very interesting. Because the Bhagavatam is speaking about what is the basic message? I mean, there's many messages in the Bible. What's one of the basic tenets of our philosophy? What's that?
Bring everyone to devotional service to Krishna.
Yes, definitely.
Yep. To use everything in the service of the Lord.
Yeah, everything in the service. Yeah. That's good. What else? What are some of the basic tenets of our philosophy?
Detachment,
right? Or renunciation, right? We're meant to be renounced, right? And as we discussed previously, the Bhagavatam is the Paramahamsa Samhita. The Bhagavatam is the Shastra which takes you to the level of being a Paramahamsa. The Bhagavatam teaches you how to be a self-realized soul. Paramahamsa means someone who understands their swarup, that their original relationship with Krishna. This is what the Bhagavatam teaches. So the Bhagavatam takes us to that level as four Paramahamsas, and yet we're being taught here how to act in the material world according to our conditioned identity as husbands and wives, because we have to understand we are conditioned. And we have not transcended our bodily identification yet, our false ego, or our understanding that we are man or we are woman. Mm. Right? Even though in the spiritual world we may have a particular swarup, which may be cowherd boy, saka, or maybe saki, maybe cowherd girl, like that. We may have a male or female swarup in the spiritual world, but in the material world we're still identifying with this temporary designation. So in order to transcend this, you have to learn how to act properly within this temporary designation. Means you have to be a proper husband, proper wife, like that, proper child, proper father, proper son, proper daughter, like that. This is all being taught within the Bhagavatam. So, it's very interesting, Prabhupada says this in the purport. I just have to find where Prabhupada says in the purport. I can't see it where Prabhupada says it in the purport. Did he say something about a sense of loss?
The reciprocation of service and love.
Oh, there it is, yeah. Okay. So if you look on the second page, on page 250 in my book, she served him with great love and affection, and she knew how to please him. So this is how the husband and wife should deal with each other. Prabhupada says there should be a great amount of love and affection within the relationship. Now this is very interesting. I remember reading this when I was a brahmachari. Prabhupada is saying you should love your wife. And I was thinking, what is this? Yeah, what is this? For me it was very hard to understand. I thought, this is Maya. How can you, as a brahmachari, I couldn't fully understand, but how do you love your wife? You're supposed to be loving Krishna. Now you've got to love a wife. I'm a brahmachari, I'm supposed to be detached from women. Right? And then if I get married in the future, then I have to love my wife. How does that work? You know, it's like, as a brahmachari, it's very hard to understand these points. But Prabhupada says this. There should be love and affection between the husband and the wife, right? It is not material love and affection if it is based on the spiritual platform. The point is you're trying to help each other become Krishna conscious, and there should be a great deal of love and affection. However, as my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, said, one lecture I remember listening to, he said, husband and wife should not be too attached or too detached from each other. There has to be a proper balance. Because if you're too detached from your wife or your husband, you'll see the relationship will begin to fall apart. There'll be many problems within the relationship because the husband and wife won't feel satisfied if they're too detached from each other. But if they're too attached, you'll see problems will come also. Because you'll see the relationship will go into a bodily concept of life, and based on that bodily identification, then if the husband and wife start relating too much on the platform of enjoyment, based on you're a woman, I am a man, or I am a man, you're a woman, or vice versa, then if it's too much in the spirit of enjoyment, too much attachment, then you'll see that will also cause problems. So all of us who have been married or who are married understand these points over there. You saw Giri Raj? Hey, Karangi. You saw Giri Raj? Come. No? After. Okay. So, if you're too attached or too detached, you'll see in marriage, then you'll see that's when problems come. And we've all experienced that. Too much attachment? Right, too much spirit of enjoyment towards the wife or the husband, right? Then problems, we've all experienced. Too much detachment, same thing, right? Usually you work this out when you're about 50. And then it's time to renounce. we have to learn to strike this balance somewhere like that. So this takes a great deal of patience on both sides to learn how to do this. But this is the system. So now Prabhupada begins to analyze what is the qualifications of a perfect wife. Mm-hmm. So do not think if you are sitting to my right that you are being let off at this point in time, because the next few verses are going to be speaking about women. You are still accountable. Prabhupada will now focus on the duties of a woman. Right, of a wife, like that. But as Prabhupada also mentioned, the husband should be qualified. Right? You want a qualified wife, and you say, well, it says in Bhagavatam, you should be like Devahuti. And Devahuti is like this, 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 and this. Yeah, it's okay, fine, but then you have to be like Kardama. And then he's also very exalted personality. And so Prabhupada will say, now, like that. But the men should keep things in perspective. This is not a one-sided affair. Okay. So, Prabhupada says... just have to find it. Yeah. Same sentence we just read before. She knew how... She served him with great love and affection, and she knew how to please him. So this is, as Prabhupada describes, this is the first class servant. Right? Second class servant means the person tells you what they want and then you do it. Third class means they tell you what they want and you don't do it properly, or you don't even do it. You neglect the service. That is third class. Second class means you're asked to do something, you do it nicely. That's second. First class means you are so sincere, or you're so conscious of what is going on in that person's mind and in their heart, that you are so dedicated to serving them and pleasing them, that even before they ask, you know what they want. That is the best service. So the wife should be that, have that much affection, that much love for her husband, that she knows even before what he wants, everything is, she knows exactly what he wants. Right? And if you're a man, then you should understand this relationship in terms of your spiritual master. That should be the attitude towards the guru. That whatever he wants, you should know it even before he wants it then. You must know it, and you must serve like that. That is called first class service. So that's when a wife becomes first class. Not that the husband has to say, can you do this? Even before he has said it, she knows what to do. And if the wife serves like that, you'll see, unless the husband is very ungrateful and very not so qualified, but if you serve the husband like that, you'll see your relationship will become very sweet, he'll become very indebted to you. And that's the Vedic culture. That's why the women are trained like that. Because if they're trained like that and they act like that, the husbands will be fully satisfied with their wives. Right? And if they're satisfied, then you'll be happy. Right? And if you're happy, vice versa. Right? And this is the important point to understand. And this basically comes down to the service attitude which every living entity must have. We serve Krishna. Right? It's not that we're worried about how will I be happy. Right? We're taught to devotional service means we have to try to understand what makes Krishna happy. We forget about our own selfish desires. So every relationship in Vedic culture is based on this exact principle. That you have to give up your own spirit of desire or attachment to enjoy yourself. As a wife, don't worry so much about yourself. Devahuti wasn't worried about herself. Devahuti was focused on Kardama. Kardama was fully satisfied with Devahuti, so then she became fully satisfied and fully benedicted. What happens in our material, when we become too materialistic, you know, we think as wives, we think, you know, if we're a wife or a woman, we think, oh, you know, he has to give me this, he has to give me that. You know, when was the last time he gave me a sari? when was the last time he gave me some jewellery? Like that, that's all material. Was Devahuti thinking like that? Where did she place the demand on Kardama? Right? And where was Kardama thinking, you know, Devahuti, or she has to just come to me and just do everything for me? He wasn't thinking like that, it wasn't his consciousness, but she was serving him so nicely, he became fully indebted to her. And he benedicted her beyond her imagination. Like that, this is the Vedic system, this is what we have to learn.
Prabhu, in the Vedic system everything was centered because the people were so God conscious. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam also that all the good qualities will develop in a person who is a devotee of the Lord. Because of that these are byproducts, good qualities will come. But in the material world people, their center is not the Lord. They are not spiritually oriented, so they cannot have good qualities. But because all these great personalities like Devahuti and Sadhana, their main center was, they were devotees. So that is why the relation, they had so many good qualities because of that. Yes, yes, the Bhakti Bhagavad Chaitanya said that if one is not a devotee, how can there be good qualities in that person? Only devotee of the Lord. Kuto Mahatkuna.
Yeah, it says that even the non-devotees can have good qualities. Like you meet some very selfless people who may not be devotees of Krishna, but those qualities will not last. It means that in due course of time, because of the influence of the material energy, they will lose those good qualities. That's what happens. You know, people with good qualities in this lifetime, and their next lifetime, by due to bad association, disappears. But for a devotee, it becomes sat, it becomes eternal. These good qualities become fully manifest and they remain like that.
And also the age can also influence, like in Srimad Bhagavatam 12th canto, it said that earlier there were so many good qualities, by the influence of the age of Kali, all the good qualities are diminishing. The age can also influence.
Yeah, because every day in this world, people treat each other very badly. And when you get treated badly a number of times, then you also become negative. And you develop these negative qualities. It's like, you know, sometimes you're driving in the car park of the shopping centre and you're coming out and you see everyone becomes very aggravated and they're all like, you know, tooting their horns and having fights and shouting at each other. And then if you just, you know, someone comes and you just smile at them, you say, no, you go first. You see the other person goes, oh, like that. And then suddenly they become very positive, right? And then it creates a good influence, some scar in their consciousness. And the next person they treat, oh, maybe they think, oh yeah, I should do that also. Like that, but in nature of the age of Kali, everyone is selfish. Too many negative things, everyone becomes the same, and everyone becomes like that. That's the nature of the age. Okay. Okay, now the qualifications of a wife. Okay, so everyone get ready. Devahuti served her husband, Ovidura. Devahuti served her husband with intimacy and great respect, with control of the senses, with love and with sweet words. So this is the beginning of the instructions in this section of the Bhagavad Gita, how to become a perfect wife. Prabhupada says in the very beginning, here two words are very significant. Devahuti served her husband in two ways, Vishrambena and Gaurabena. These are two important processes in serving the husband or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as a wife, you should think, this is how I should serve my husband. And as a male, you should think, this is how I should serve Krishna. Like that, because all of us are prakriti. All of us are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So Prabhupada says, these two words, Vishrambena means
intimacy,
and Gauravena means
reverence.
Reverence, yeah, or respect, like that. So this should be the mood of service. When we serve our superior, when the wife serves the husband, it should be with intimacy. Just like, say you're serving someone prasadam, right? 50% of the digestion is in the service, the way it's served. Right? It's not just, you can cook the most nicest prasadam, but if it's not served nicely, the person cannot digest properly. They won't feel satisfied. You can cook so many nice preparations, but if it's not served nicely, like that. So when you serve the husband, or when you serve Krishna, or when you serve anyone, right? This is personalism, right? When you serve someone, you have to serve them very nicely. And intimately means you know exactly what they want. You know, because you serve the husband every day. You know what he wants, right? You know how much he eats. You know which things he likes. You know how he likes. Everyone's particular. I'm very particular. You know? And this is the way I am, this is why I was trained by my guru. I'm very particular. So I like things in a very particular way. But when someone serves you like that, then you feel very indebted. Feel very grateful because the person has put in effort for you. That is called intimacy. And when the person learns what you like and they serve you like that, you feel very indebted. Okay, you don't like bananas. Right? So they make you banana milkshake. Right? Oh, here's banana milkshake, but I don't like bananas. I remember when I stayed with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Oxford in 2001, the last time I saw him, I was having breakfast with him every day, and he was taking, I think it was grapefruit juice. It was a glass of grapefruit juice. Before breakfast he'd have a whole glass of grapefruit juice because it was good for his digestion like that. So the first day I was there, they served grapefruit juice and they also made me a glass, and I don't like it. So I kind of looked at it, and yeah, he looked at me, and I looked at it, and I said to him, he looked at me, and I kind of said, what is this? And he said, it's grapefruit juice. And I said, great, like that. He said, oh, you don't like it? And I said, no, I don't like it. I said, you drink it, but I don't like it. And I said, okay. So I drank it. And then the next day, his servant put it on the table again. Right, and immediately he had a buzzer on the table, you know, like a doorbell. Like a doorbell. Because in the kitchen he would press the buzzer and it would go off in the kitchen and the servant would run in from the kitchen. That's what he'd do while he's taking prasad. So he pressed the buzzer and they came in and he said, I told you yesterday not to serve that to him. He doesn't like it. Right, and immediately they took it away like that. That is personalism. Right? That's how we should serve someone. And that's how the wife should serve the husband. Intimacy. If you know the person, then you have to serve them according to what they like. Right? And if you do that, then that's how affection comes. Right? That's how the husband should deal with the wife. That's how the wife should deal with the husband. This is the system. This is the Vedic culture. Right? The wife should serve the husband like that. The husband should serve the wife like that. He knows what she likes. Right? He knows she likes silk sari. not the cotton one. He knows what colour she likes. Like, I know the colour Beta Priya likes. I know the types of sari she likes. I know the pattern she likes. Right? I don't go to India and buy, you know, this particular type of sari and come back and give it to her and say, oh, how do you like it? And she says, I don't like it, I don't wear that sari. You know I don't wear that sari. Yeah, but I like that sari. Yeah, yeah, that's not intimacy. Intimacy, you know, what does she like?
Yeah.
Then that's what you give, right? Intimacy, what does he like to eat? That's what you give. How does he like to be served? Everyone gets served differently. Right? Some devotees are particular, some devotees are not particular. It's all, you have to know, that's intimacy. Mm. Now Prabhupada says, Vishwambena, and then Gauravena. Gauravena means? With respect. But the mood of respect should not be broken. Because Prabhupada says, familiarity breeds contempt. Right? So it is not that you're serving intimately, right? But then you become too intimate, you never lose the respect. Right? This is very important when serving the spiritual master. Very important when serving the spiritual master. Because if you serve him intimately and you get a lot of association with guru or with any senior devotee, and then if you lose that mood of respect immediately, the relationship changes. And the spiritual master will immediately detect, the senior Vaishnava will immediately detect and correct if there's any discrepancy there. So just like Tamal Krishnamaraj, when he was serving Prabhupada in 1977, just before Prabhupada left this world, then one time, because he had a very intimate relationship with Prabhupada, Prabhupada would wake up in the final days before he left this world, Prabhupada would wake up and the first thing he'd say when he woke up is, where is Tamal? And then they go and get Tamal Krishnamaraj and bring him. Very intimate. And Prabhupada would sit up in bed and Tamal Krishnamaraj would scratch his back. And they would speak very intimately together. Right? Very intimate relationship between the guru and the disciple. And sometimes Tamal Krishnamaraj would even like discuss with Prabhupada. Prabhupada would say, what is your opinion? Right? And then Tamal Krishnamaraj would say, like this, like this. And then one time he was like, not correcting Prabhupada, but sort of almost like instructing Prabhupada or giving Prabhupada advice. Because he had a relationship where Prabhupada would ask him things. So he was saying something, and then Prabhupada felt he'd crossed the line like that, so then Prabhupada immediately said, because the mood was very sweet, and then Prabhupada immediately became very heavy. But Tamal Krishnamaraj immediately understood like that. Yeah? Gone too far. Right? So that mood of respect must not be given up. Right? As soon as given, you have to come back immediately. Now that is not lost. Okay. So between husband and wife, the wife should always serve the husband. There should be an element of respect. Don't become disrespectful like that. Because if you analyze really, if you see, if you really, a lot of the time we take each other for granted. Our husbands take wives for granted. Wives take husbands for, but actually, if you actually analyze what the other person is doing for you, and if you really contemplate and understand the depth of the relationship, right, and how much assistance you are giving each other, then you will not treat them disrespectfully. You will not lose that mood of respect. So that should be there. That should not be given up. And as is said, we are never the losers when we take the position of humility. The problem is in this material world is that we have false ego. That's the problem. And the problem is in the material world is that we've come into the age of Kali and it is destroying all the fibre or the integrity or the good qualities and character of all the human beings. So we don't like to serve. We don't come from that background, that culture. Those who are born in the Indian families, in the Indian bodies, you have more that culture of service. Those in the Western bodies, we have even less that culture of service. So the problem is, we don't like to serve. But you have to understand that every relationship in your life, as a devotee, you never lose when you take the humble position. Right? You never lose when you take the position of service. You never, ever, ever lose. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Trinadapi. You never lose by becoming humble. What do you lose by serving? And what does the wife lose by serving the husband? You can say, why do I have to be the wife? Why do I have to cook? Why do I have to look after? Why do I have to take the humble position? Why do I have to be subservient like that? You don't lose. Look what Devahuti gets. Does she ever complain to Kardama? Did she ever challenge Kardama? None of that was there. And what did she get? So much benediction was there. So that is the mood that all of us must develop. Now Prabhupada says within the purport, the wife should learn to tolerate the wrong by the husband. Sometimes none of us are perfect. So sometimes the husband does something wrong. Yeah, practically every day. Yeah, I know, I do something wrong every day. You know, probably about 8 times a day, you know, I do something wrong. You know, my wife has to tolerate those things. But it doesn't mean she loses respect. It doesn't mean she becomes challenging to the husband. You know, the husband asks her to do something. She says, oh yeah, but what did you do yesterday? And then, you know, then big argument comes up. You know? That is not the proper mood. So Prabhupada says, or it actually says in this verse, what is the essential quality or characteristic that the wife must have towards the husband?
Toleration.
Toleration, yeah, there's many of them there. But what's the last one that's mentioned? Which is
sweet words.
He said, yeah, sweet speech. This one quality, and this is, goes for men and women, this one quality will practically cure all problems in our lives. If you can learn this art of sweet speech. And especially if you're a wife. You have to speak sweetly to your husband. Even if you do not feel like it. Even if he has done so many silly things. Even if it doesn't matter what. Even if it's that time of the month. It does not matter if you speak sweetly to the husband, it will virtually will cure all the problems. And it means the same for the men as well. Sweet speech, it cures all problems. You see, like sometimes someone's very angry with you or very disturbed with you, or someone really doesn't like you, and you just speak very sweetly and very softly and very gently and very respectfully to them, and the whole relationship can change. It's the most important quality practically. Especially for a wife, it is the quality. I know myself that when my wife speaks sweetly, doesn't matter how angry I am, or how annoyed I am, or how much, you know, I don't want to see her, or how much I wish I was on a different planet, or you know, how much I wish I was, you know, did not come back from Vrindavan, or you know, whatever, like that. And she feels like that about me as well. You know, sometimes she feels like, yeah, how do I marry this guy? You know, what was I thinking? That guy. And, you know, we all go through our moments where we think like that. But I know that when I'm thinking about my wife, I'm thinking, you know, like that. But when she speaks sweetly, then I think, oh, okay. Doesn't matter. And, you know, it's not such a big deal. Like that. So this is why it's such an important quality, especially for the wife. It must be there. Like that. Prabhupada says at the end of the purport that Sohridena Vacha Maturaya means always desiring good for the husband and speaking to him with sweet words. A person becomes agitated by so many material contacts in the outside world, therefore, in his home life he must be treated by his wife with sweet words. Because Prabhupada says when you're out in the world, you get so much negativity. You just want to come home and relax. And actually say, if you look at statistics, it says that something like 80% or 90% of domestic arguments begin within 7 minutes of the husband walking through the door. Most of the arguments happen within 7 minutes of them walking through the door. Because he's fried. Right? He's just been at work all day. Yeah, hands up if you enjoy your work. Right, so he's fried. They're fried all the time. And you're fried. Right? You've been at home all day looking after the kids and cleaning. Do you like doing your laundry? Do you like ironing? Hands up. Right? So you're fried. Right? They're fried. I mean, in 7 minutes, that's when 80 or 90% something like that domestic arguments begin. 7 minutes of them walking in. Because he just wants to come home and he just wants sweet words. That's all he wants. Right, he comes home and what does he get? You know, do you know what sort of a day I've had? You know, how come you haven't done the mowing? You know, what, the last weekend you said you go look after the kids, you didn't, you know, like that, and then he's already dry, right? Like that. So just learn this, if you can learn this art of sweet speech, it will solve practically all the problems in our relationship. And same with the husband. The husband walks in, you know, sometimes you know you're going to get it. Right? You walk in the door, you know it's waiting for you. Right? Even before you get home, you know what's going to happen. You'll get home. You walk in the door, you're like that, but you know you've got to have it all worked out in your head. Yeah? You've got to have, no matter what she says, no matter which button she pushes, no matter what goes on, I'm only going to respond with sweet speech. Okay. And you see what happens? You know, she takes off, you speak sweetly, and then everything just gets brought back into perspective again. So if you can learn this, as, especially as women, it will make all the difference in your relationship.
These women also working, and how far does it matter? She's also tied up in her own office. See, those days were when the man used to go out and come back and wife was at home. But these days, both men and women are working. And it's not that easy to expect somebody to speak sweet.
Yeah, I know. But that's what the Bhagavad Gita says. If you want a peaceful relationship, then you have to learn how to do that.
So we should say that, well, whatever income the man is earning, and with that one should satisfy the family, and therefore never allow the partner to be outside working.
Yes.
Then the first act, 50% of the problem gets solved with that situation.
Yeah, well, in Kali Yuga that's difficult.
So therefore we have to celebrate whatever I speak.
It's up to you. I'm presenting what the Bible does.
There's a fundamental flaw in that logic, though. The fundamental flaw in that logic is that it's the working woman who is got the right to be most.
Are you kids? You're making a lot of noise down back there. And in the next chapter, it talks about kids. You guys better listen. Okay.
So the flaw in the argument is that it presupposes that working women necessarily are exposed to more stress rather than house women who are managing the house, which is not necessarily true.
That could be true. How about you two have a discussion outside of class and you bring back the conclusions to us? Only because I want to keep moving. Otherwise, I would have.
I finished my point.
Yeah.
I don't want to deliver this.
You guys work it out. Whatever you decide.
I think
we
work that.
All the purpose is wife cannot call her husband by name.
In this purple?
In this purple.
Is number that purple or what?
In the same purple.
According to the Vedic civilization, a wife cannot call her husband by name. I already made that point a few weeks ago, last week or the week before. That's why I didn't bring it up. But thank you for.
Regarding serving the husband with intimacy and knowing his life and his life, like some of the arguments also happen if the wife wants that the husband should be healthy, good, and the husband doesn't. Very good. It happens so much in our house. Like I wanted, like you said about banana milkshake today in the morning, we had that argument. I wanted him to have it because it's good for health, and he was saying it's not good at all. So like how many times it happens? You know, one person is health conscious and the other person is not, and then how do we solve these problems?
I think one thing that has to be there, and this is why I'm still married, and I don't know what happened in that case, so far, you know, it's so good. It means that if the relationship, hey you guys, you have to quieten down. That's all the talking. What's all the talking? We're trying to have class, you have to be quiet. So if you want the relationship to last, it means that you have to learn to adapt. It can't be that all the time you're expecting the other person to adapt. That's the point. Like, as Prabhupada is saying here, the woman has to take this submissive role. Right? Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Okay, that's granted. But it doesn't mean that the husband doesn't, you know, make any, he doesn't bend or he doesn't make any adaptation for the wife. Like, I know myself, I've had to change, you know, myself 100% totally since I've been married, right? To stay married, right? And I know my wife there's probably, I don't know, you know, because you don't always know what goes on for the other partner, but I know she must have to make so much adaptation to put up with me as being her husband. There's probably a lot of things she doesn't really like or that she doesn't really prefer in her life, but she's married to me and that's the way life's turned out. You know, so it means that you both have to adapt. So if the wife is saying to the husband, I want you to eat healthy, then the husband should listen to an extent. You know, there has to be some like win-win situation, or there has to be some meeting point. You know, because this will cause, and then what happens usually is when one of the partners just takes like their stance and says, listen, this is the way it's going to be, you know, good luck. You know, then the relationship can have all sorts of problems. You know, what I usually try to do is if my wife keeps saying something, you know, and then I keep hearing her saying it and saying it, then I start thinking, well, obviously it means a lot to her, so I'm going to have to begin to adapt. Right? I know there's certain things that, you know, she's put a lot of pressure on me about, and I thought, you know, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to go down this road, or I don't want to, you know, for me this is not so important, but I can see for her it's a big thing. Right? Just like, say, finances, that's a big thing for a woman. Right? For a man, so men, different men are different, but for me, I'm not the kind of man who thinks so much. Like, you know, I'm a practical person. Like, I always plan for the future. Like, I'm practical, I'm not naive. But, you know, I'm also a person who just depends on Krishna. That's just the way I am by nature. I'm just like, you know, Krishna will look after me, I know that. But women aren't like that. And when I was, you know, about 5 years after we're married, you know, then the wife gives you the whole, you know, speech, which, you know, usually every husband gets. You know, where's my security? What's going to happen in the future? You know, what happens if you get sick? Who's going to look after us? Like, the whole thing. And for me, I was just like, you know, I used to say to my wife, I'll just depend on Krishna. Yeah. And then I realized after about saying that about 6 times that that was a really silly thing to say. Because she was just getting more and more upset. And I couldn't understand it. I was thinking, what's the problem? Just depend on Krishna. What's the problem? And then after she kept bringing up, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Obviously for her, I don't understand it because I'm different. But for her, it's an important point. So then, you know, now we've set up financial security, and we have financial security, and, you know, we have that. Now she feels peaceful. So it's something that, you know, has to be looked at. So if, you know, health is a very important thing. Mm. Yeah, none of us are getting younger. You know, like I've lost weight in the last, you know, three months or so. I'm exercising and eating more carefully. You know, because my wife was saying to me, you know, you could look after your health more. And I was just like, well, you know, I'm chanting and I'm like, you know, I haven't got time to worry about my physical side because I'm just involved in my devotional side. You know, but she's saying this is not good. You know, you got to. So then I started to listen. Now I'm doing something about that positive. So the husband and wife, they have to listen to each other. Right? And if you want the relationship to last, then you have to adapt for each other. You know, it has to be some like that. Is that help? Brother?
If the wife is concerned with the health, the husband can give a health option which is more acceptable for him. He can give a substitute for that if he doesn't want banana shake. Is it okay? You want to get potassium from banana, potassium you can find in other ones, so you can give me this. I like that more. Or like that.
Yeah.
So actually in relationship, even children also vital roles over there. There's some problem with children bringing up one person, mother scolding the father siding the child. It's very much problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big problem. I know some friends of my family and the husband and wife broke up because the husband wanted to give the children vaccination,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the needles,
mm-hmm.
and the wife was 100% against. And she went on a holiday 2 weeks up to Queensland or something.
Mm-hmm.
She came back and he gave them all in vaccination.
Okay.
So they broke up. Because she could not tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
And for her that was like the worst thing you could do to her
mm-hmm.
children. You touch my children like that. But for him, he was like, you know, if you don't do it, then... So anyway. So the point is we should not break up. We should not have divorce. Prabhupada says there should not be divorce. But this means that you're going to have to adapt.
Normally, from Indian perspective, divorce does not occur at all. Therefore, we take for things for granted,
mm-hmm.
at least in this generation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find divorce anywhere
thing.
In my circle. So, therefore, that thought never comes to us, first of all.
Yeah. And one of the big problems these days is that people, we live in houses where there's only one husband and one wife. And that's not even a healthy situation. You know, because you have one husband and one wife, you're going to drive each other nuts. You know, the Vedic system is the husband and wife only spend 1 hour a day together. That's the Vedic system. Because in the Vedic system, you're living with the father, you're living with the uncles, you're living with the brothers, you're living with the, you can't even spend time together. There's so many people, that's healthy. And then what we have now, we have these nuclear families where everyone's just locked in one little space, two people. I mean, of course you're going to drive each other nuts. How would you expect? Like that. So this is a very unhealthy situation at this point. So it's very difficult to stay married in this situation. Like me and Beta Peru have been living at the farm for, what is it now? Nearly 3 months. And I'm surprised how well we've done. You know, because I really thought, I was very concerned, I thought, oh, this is going to be very difficult. Money grievous is going to come down in another month.
Mm.
You know, so it'll be nearly 4 months where we're almost by ourselves. I mean, other people are there, but more, and I really thought it was going to be more difficult, and we've done pretty well considering. But it's not easy just to spend, you know, time like that. I mean, you really need, it's more devotees you've got around, the better. So if any of you like to come and live there, then. I keep telling all you guys, and you all keep smiling, but you know. All say, I love you, but no one comes. I come to you whenever you need me, I'm there. All four. We'll speak later on. Okay. Working sanely and diligently. She pleased her very powerful husband, giving up all lust, pride, envy, greed, sinful activities, and vanity. This is how exalted Devahuti is. She gives up these qualities for her husband, to protect her husband. Right? First of all, she gives up lust. Very important that the wife protects the husband in terms of lust. Because it is natural, as we've said, there are so many differences between men and women. Men are very attached to enjoying with a woman. So it is the duty of the woman to create an atmosphere or a ethos or like a an atmosphere that the husband does not feel that he is attracted to enjoy with the wife unnecessarily. It is the wife's duty to protect the husband in that respect. Because the husband is more inclined towards that kind of activity. So it is the duty of the wife to make sure that the husband does not fall down. It's also the duty of the husband. But she must act very chastely. It means here Devahuti gives up lust. So she dresses appropriately, she speaks appropriately, she acts appropriately. She does not try to disturb his consciousness. Like that, because she wants him to be fixed on Krishna. That is the point. So that is the first qualification the wife must have, which is mentioned in this verse. And pride and it says vanity at the end. She should not be proud. Prabhupada gives the example within the purport of Gandhari. Gandhari blindfolded herself for life. We can't even understand these women. As a man or a woman, we can't even understand these people. I don't think there's anyone in this room who would do that. I really don't think I could do that. My wife is blind and I put her in a blindfold. I mean, I'm going back in culture and having all the support and everything, I still don't know if I could do that. That's just such another level. These are the kind of people we're talking about. This is what Devahuti is like. This is what Swayambhuva Manu is like. This is what Kardama is like. This is what Gandhari is like. This is the kind of caliber we're talking about. The only thing we can do is offer our obeisances to them and try to follow in their footsteps to whatever capacity we can. We probably can't be like them. I don't think we could be like them. But at least understand what the standard is and try to go there. So she gave up pride and vanity. In other words, the wife should not make herself feel superior to the husband. Prabhupada gives the example in the purport The wife may come from a rich family, the husband comes from a poor family, so she has like this pride about her when they're married, and she's looking at the, oh, you know, my family is to give me so much, you know, and I have to get so much, and what do you give me, like that. And making him feel, you know, if you make the man feel like that, if you make the man feel little, right, it'll cause problems in the relationship, guaranteed. Prabhupada said, just psychology. So, she, even though she was the daughter of the richest king in the universe, right, she was the richest, most beautiful, most qualified princess in the universe, but when she came to his cottage and she started living with him, she never mentioned anything. Right? Never put any obligation or pressure on him in any way or shape or form. Right? Rejected all pride or vanity. Envy, greed, sinful activities. Prabhupada says, sinful activity, Prabhupada says that she was never unchaste or unfaithful, or she never desired another man. Right? This is for a woman, Prabhupada says the most important quality for the woman is chastity. Right? She must be dedicated to her husband. That is the most important quality for the woman. And if she becomes unfaithful, it means if she leaves the husband for another man, right, that is the greatest sinful activity for a woman. It's like Krishna said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, what's the worst thing the kshatriya could do? Walk off the battlefield. Just, that's not kshatriya. That's the worst. The worst thing a kshatriya could do is walk away from the battle.
Krishna says you might as well die instead of doing this, because
yeah,
a respectable person dishonors his worth.
Yeah, so the most dishonorable thing a woman can do is to go with another man. So even it means, in Vedic times, it means that the women have to be very careful how they deal with other men who are not their husbands. Right? There should not be a mood of enjoyment, especially in front of the husband. You know, I mean, you be respectful. When we have friends, like we're all friends, you know, like the Mataji's and the Prabhus, we see each other all the time, we're always at the temple together, we have close relationships. You know, I have very close relationships with many of the Mataji's. But in front of my wife, and even when my wife's not there, I don't have, like, you know, to the best of my ability, try to enjoy with the women. Try to have, like, loose relationships or with the women. It should be very, and the woman should be very careful, especially in front of the husband and also when the husband's not there, not to enjoy with the men. There has to be proper relationships. Actually, it says, if you want to go Vedic, like, to the Vedic level, to the highest level, she should not even speak to men who are not in the family of the husband. That was the Vedic level. Right? Devahuti would only speak to the men within her family or within her husband's family. Wouldn't even speak to men outside. They wouldn't even see her face. I mean, this is the level it went to. But at least on our level, we should at least practice that there should not be unchastity. Right, or that husband should never see the wife enjoying, or the wife should never see the husband enjoying with another woman, even frivolously. Just for sense gratification, just, you know, speaking whimsically and joking around. It's not appropriate. Like that, so.
So what's the difference between pride and vanity?
Pride, the word is dambam, and vanity is madam. So they're very similar qualities. But if you look at the Sanskrit, one is called pride and the other one is madam. Madam means like intoxicated or vain, and proud means to be like, to be proud of that intoxication or that thing that you have. Does that make sense? Or? They're very similar like that, maybe just slightly different.
Isn't vanity connected to the beauty and pride can be?
Yeah, usually. Yeah. Usually vanity means when someone is beautiful and then they're attached to their beauty, that's called vain, usually. The vanity actually can mean if they're attached to anything that they have. Like, you know, when a rich person walks down the street, or someone pulls up in front of the temple in Mercedes, and they get out and they're like, you know, like that's, you know, vain. Usually it means beauty, but it can mean other things also. Okay.
Mud, I thought it was like intoxication.
Madam?
Mud.
Mud, yeah.
That's intoxication.
Yeah, madam means vanity. Yeah, it means to become madam. Yeah, it means inebriated or intoxicated.
Mm.
Like that. Okay. The daughter of Manu, who was fully devoted to her husband, looked upon him as greater even than Providence. Thus she expected great blessings from him. Having served him for a long time, she grew weak and emaciated due to her religious observances. Seeing her condition, Kardama, the foremost of celestial sages, was overcome with compassion and spoke to her in a voice choked with great love. So, as has been pointed out here, that the wife must be willing to follow the principles of the husband. Just like if the husband's a poor man and the wife comes from a more wealthy family, but she marries a very qualified man, just like you see Kardama is very qualified, right, exalted, and Devahuti is coming from a much more opulent background, but she marries him, she never places improper demands upon him. She has to be prepared to follow the principles of the husband. In other words, if he has a particular mentality, she has to be prepared to follow. And especially this is what it's like as a devotee, then the wife has to be willing to follow the husband. Even if the husband is a more serious devotee. He may be more serious devotee and you may be still have your material attachments. But if he is serious devotee, you have to support him and follow him. Sometimes even it comes the other way, that the wife is the more serious one. So then the husband has to make sure he gives her all facilities to advance in Krishna consciousness. That's the point. The wife or the husband should never get in the way of the other person's spiritual advancement. Right? Even though the husband or the wife may find it difficult to come up to the level of the other, but they should never interfere with the advancement of the other person. That is the point. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. So Prabhupada will make the point in the next few verses. The wife will get 50%, Prabhupada says this at the end of Canto 6. She will get half of the advancement of the husband. She will get it. So that is why, if the husband is a good devotee, he doesn't have to be Kardama Muni. He doesn't have to be someone very exalted. He doesn't have to be like, you know, it's easy to pick faults in each other. It's easy to say, oh, well, you're not this and you're not that. That's fine. But the point is that the husband is a good devotee. Then you should follow him. And if you follow him, you will get auspiciousness. You will get half of his advancement. Prabhupada even mentions that if he goes back to Godhead, you will follow. If he transcends, you will also get that benediction. So that's why you should take the submissive role and serve. Even though it may be difficult, but still you won't lose, that's the point. That's what Devahuti was. She was given such benediction, as we'll see in the next few verses. Kardama Muni continued, I have achieved the blessings of the Lord in discharging my own religious life of austerity, meditation and Krishna consciousness. Although you have not yet experienced these achievements, which are free from fear and lamentation, I shall offer them all to you because you are engaged in my service. Now just look at them. I am giving you the transcendental vision to see how nice they are. So Prabhupada points out within the second or third paragraph He says that the secret of success in Krishna consciousness, in the third paragraph, Prabhupada says, for spiritual achievement, the easiest path is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and to serve him with heart and soul. That is the secret of success. And basically, if you look at ISKCON, there are many different Vaishnav institutions on earth at the moment. There are even many Gaudiya Vaishnav institutions on earth at the moment. But by far, ISKCON is the most powerful and most expansive, widespread, most successful, right? By far. So why is that?
Because Srila Prabhupada is successful in installing the concept of a guru and disciple relationship.
Yeah. Because, I was going to say it more simply, but basically it's because of Srila Prabhupada. Right? ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada. We have to understand that. And all of us are only here for one reason, right? And that's only because of Prabhupada. Right? And all of us, any service we do, is assisting Prabhupada. Basically, I mean, we're serving our gurus, to Prabhupada. I'm not belittling the position of our gurus, but basically, we're all serving Prabhupada. ISKCON means Prabhupada. He is the Samstaka Acharya, which means the founder Acharya, right? So basically, it means all of us are serving Srila Prabhupada. And whatever service we do to ISKCON means we are assisting Prabhupada, and it means we get his mercy. So that means we can, all of us can go back to Godhead. Why? Because just like Devahuti served Kardama, right? And Kardama went back to the spiritual world, so Devahuti also went back to the spiritual world. So if we serve Prabhupada, right? Because Prabhupada is already from the spiritual world and in the spiritual world, if we serve Prabhupada, we will also go back to the spiritual world by his grace, by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, like that. So that is the special division. Kardama Muni continued, what is the use of enjoyment other than the Lord's grace? All material achievements are subject to be annihilated simply by a movement of the eyebrows of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By your principles of devotion to your husband, you have achieved and can enjoy transcendental gifts very rarely obtained by persons proud of aristocracy and material possessions. So Kardama is pointing out to Devahuti, what is the prema kumata mahan? What is the goal of life? It is prema. It is Krishna prema. That is the goal of life. That is the most treasured thing. So she is pointing out, he is pointing out to her, this is the benediction that you will receive. Because you have served me, and because I am a recipient of the Lord's mercy, you will also get love of God. So, in the purport, Prabhupada mentions how merciful is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he has given to everyone, the most unqualified people in Kali Yuga, he has given them the opportunity to develop love of God. And each one of us has been given that opportunity to develop love of God. Lord Chaitanya has spread love of God. What does that mean? He's given everyone the opportunity to develop it. And if we all take the opportunity seriously, we can develop love for Krishna. Upon hearing and the speaking of her husband, who excelled in knowledge of all kinds of transcendental science, innocent Devahuti was very satisfied. Her smiling face shining with a slightly bashful glance, she spoke in a choked voice because of great humility and love. Sri Devahuti said, my dear husband, O best of the Brahmanas, I know that you have achieved perfection and are the master of all the infallible mystic powers because you are under the protection of Yoga Maya, the transcendental nature. But you once made a promise that our bodily union should now fulfill. Since children are a great quality for a chaste woman who has a glorious husband. So this is the nature of a woman, that she desires children. That is her nature. The Sanskrit word for woman is stri. Prabhupada says stri means expansive. It's the nature of a woman. Stri means expansive.
Expansive.
Prabhupada mentions in the purport. It's the nature of a woman. I know when I was a brahmachari, I didn't have so many possessions. But when I got a stri, then suddenly, that is the nature. Yeah? It's like men, like we just walk around, you know, we just get up, you know, walk out of the house. But a woman, they always have a bag. Right? Street, expansion, like that. Right? And just comes. And then they want kids. So they have kids, okay? And then expansion.
Children.
Yeah. It continues like that. That is the nature of the material world. So it's natural for a woman to want children. And if you enter marriage life, it is the duty of the husband to provide children for the wife. That is her duty. Sorry, that is his duty. If she desires children, you must satisfy that desire. Otherwise, yeah, if the husband says to the wife, no, I will not give you children, then why did you get married? Do not take a wife and then not satisfy her desires. That's not appropriate. You must. If the wife desires, you must give. Like that.
But at the same time, the wife wants 10 children.
If she wants 10.
There's some limit to them.
The person can't give Prabhu.
If the person can't give, that is karma. Okay. Myself and my wife, we tried for 5 years to have children, did not come. Okay. And then one other child came. So this was my okay. Devahuti continued, my dear Lord, I am struck by excited emotion for you. Actually, I won't read that verse because that opens up a whole new topic. So we'll finish there, and tomorrow night we'll go from verse 11, which I was going to read tonight, but I'll read it tomorrow night because it actually begins a whole new subject matter. So tomorrow we'll go from verse 11. I'll have to prepare the class tomorrow. We may finish the chapter, but I think the chapter's got about 50 something verses, hasn't it? 56 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think we will finish the chapter. I think it's probably too much to do in one night. So we'll probably finish it in the next two classes and then continue from there. Shall we call a party key?
Yeah.